dead. So what do we have left on the earth? Some elect people and some people who through those events did not come to Christ. And then that's it. That's enough. Meaning those people have been given every opportunity to repent. They haven't. Now, here's the point. Here's the theological point. The point is simply this. We struggle to believe that anyone, having seen all of that, would not repent. That's the point, right? But the Bible has prepared us for that. Do you remember the story of Elijah the prophet? Right? We had the chance while we were in Israel to actually stand where this story supposedly happened. And, I mean, I don't suppose it's a huge leap. It's the site that's been considered the place for, you know, who knows how long, and there's lots of good reasons for that. But anyway, that's not the point. Do you remember that story? So the story was, you remember under Jeroboam, I always get Rehoboam and Jeroboam mixed up, but under Jeroboam, Jeroboam caused the Israelites to begin worshiping God in an idolatrous manner after Solomon. It says that he introduced golden calves and he said, "Here is your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt." So they're still worshiping God, but now they're doing it in an idolatrous fashion. That's step one. Now, under Ahab and Jezebel, we get to step two. Step two is they actually start worshiping foreign gods. Jezebel brings in foreign gods from the region of Tyre and Sidon, and then there's a resurrection in the Canaanite worship forms. They're making their children pass through the fire, doing children's sacrifices the Canaanites had before them. Do you remember all this? And then there's a showdown, do you remember, between Elijah and the prophets of Baal. So Elijah, he says, "Okay, Ahab," he says to Israel, "stop wavering back and forth between God and other gods. It's time to decide who you're going to worship." And so he says, "Gather up your prophets of Baal." And you remember the story. There's a confrontation, and Elijah calls for fire from heaven, and the other guys are calling for fire from heaven, and they're dancing around. Nothing happens to them. Elijah has soaked his sacrifice in water, and fire from God comes and consumes it, and then they slaughter the prophets of Baal, and they say, "The Lord, the Lord, the Lord is God." Do you remember the story? What's the point of the story? They still didn't repent and worship the Lord. What happens next? A death warrant is issued for Elijah. He has to run and hide. And is there a great revival in Israel? No. So people say, you know, how come God doesn't show up like that? You know, it won't be great evangelism in the city of Aurelia. You go down to the city square, you put a big cow there, you cover it in water, and you call out for fire. We've done that. It didn't work. Right? And so the Bible prepares us for the fact that even in a time of overwhelming signs and wonders, many people don't repent. Now, many people will, but many people won't. There's no underestimating or no overestimating the capacity of a man to close his eyes to the truth of God. Because the Bible tells us the driving desire in most men and women's heart is to be a god unto themselves, deciding right and wrong. How many people do you know who, despite all the evidences of the grace of God, have not repented? You say, "You grew up in a Christian home. You had this experience. You had that experience. You had that miracle where God blessed you with this thing. You know, he did this great gracious thing to your child. He did this thing. He did this. He moved in this thing. And still," right? All of the Bible, all of history tells us that there is no overestimating the hardness of hearts.
This is just an extension on that, but during this Ellie thing that happens, yep, and all that kind of stuff, would it be feasible that God would sort of protect the elect like he did with the Roman plagues so that we could go in and...
Yeah, like, a couple words on that. Yeah, there are hints, particularly in Isaiah, that, like, in Isaiah, it talks about, in the Isaiah apocalypse, it talks about, like, there's this imagery where out of the ruined city, out of the ashes and the rubble of a ruined city, a remnant begins to come forth and sing the songs of Zion, right? And so you get this idea, like, imagine a city that's been destroyed by a nuclear bomb or something, and then it's over, and then out of the rubble of the remnant comes this remnant singing songs of Zion. You're like, what? And the idea is that God had a way to hide, like in the cleft of his hand, a remnant for himself. Okay? So, sure. A couple things, you know, I would say, though. In the Roman plagues, it doesn't say that Christians didn't die. In fact, I wish I could remember better. I want to say Chrysostom, but I'm sure maybe that's not true. I don't even remember. There was a Christian bishop who wrote a lot about what Christians were doing in the time of the plague, and he himself was going into these death houses to change the bedsheets. Anyway, he died in the plague. It doesn't say that Christians don't die. Their death rate was significantly lower than the pagans, but we share in the sufferings of the world. So if you're hoping that there's some way for a giant volcano to go off and kill two-thirds of the people in North America, but somehow it misses all the Christians, it's not going to happen. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. I think there will be plenty of signs and wonders of preservation. That he will help us persevere and endure through trial, that will be part and parcel of the witness to the pagan world, which causes people to repent. But I don't think it means we get a free ticket through. But also I would say some of that is just going to come through in the quality of community. Right? For example, and again, I don't want to be a pragmatist. I just think there's double causality in all these things. In the Roman plagues, medical people who read those history books, they don't see any miracle. There's no disputing that fewer Christians died than pagans. And literally, there's no disputing. Like, when pagans write these books, they're not trying to advance the cause of Christ. You can go and study sarcophaguses and tombs in Rome, very well preserved, and you'll notice that there was a period of time when everybody who died was a pagan and very few Christians died. You just go count the tombstones, right? How come in this year, 90% of the people who died were pagans, and then in this year, it was the proportion you'd expect, Christians to pagans? And it's recorded in Roman history. Nobody debates the facts. It's the meanings they debate. And when medical people read those stories, they say, well, there's no miracle there. We all know that basic nursing cuts down mortality rates in plague by 2/3. Yeah, but providing basic nursing for people in a plague is a miracle. Why in the world would you, without any protection, go and change the bed sheets and wipe the filth and spoon broth to your brother Christian when the chances of you now getting the plague are exponentially higher? Well, because you know when you die, you're going to heaven. So, my point is, it's certainly a miracle, but what kind of miracle? Is it the sort of miracle that just proves the superiority of God's ways? Or is it a Psalm 91 miracle? I don't know. Either way, here's what I can guarantee you. You'll share in the suffering of the time to come, and the quality of our community will be the content of our witness to a world in peril. Think about that for just a second. Imagine that there was some catastrophe, you know, whatever, fill in the blank. All you have to do is watch the science channels. My son and I were watching, what science channel were we watching? Discovery. There was a Discovery show on coronal mass ejections from the sun, which are bad, apparently. And apparently, every once in a while, there's this big explosion, coronal mass ejection, and it sends particles to the earth, which mess up our magnetic shield, and bad things happen. And apparently, 2012 is supposed to be this time of really bad sun storms. And so Max is freaking out, right? And because they tell us that on this show, it's on the Discovery Channel, right? This isn't Bible study now. This is Discovery Channel. You know, when I tell him that wrath is coming at Family Devotions, and then he sees, and then later we watch the Discovery Channel, now we got something. And so this sunspot we saw on the Discovery Channel, it says if there was ever a coronal mass ejection that hit the Earth, it would completely wipe out all satellite communication and it would explode the power grid. And so, you know, you got all these scientists saying, yeah, this would effectively push us back into the Middle Ages, and fuel would dry up because, you know, you got all the refining plants or use electricity, and without fuel, we can't, you know, move medicines around. And so, yeah, you know, probably like 2 to 3 billion people would die within 6 months and stuff, and by the time we got the power grid back on. And Max is like, what is going on, right? Like, 2 to 3 billion people? That sounds serious. And anyway, you know, all that is to say. Lots of potential ways there could be horrific, catastrophic events. We don't know. We don't know all the details. But the bottom line is, we live in tenuous times, I think I would say. And you know, I think we just have to understand that, you know, we live each day on borrowed time, right? So be ready for the Lord's return. Any other questions not related to the Discovery Channel? Oh, sorry. We started that whole conversation just to say this. So whatever your, fill in your ELE, right? Fill in the blank. Horrific event. Imagine such a thing were to happen. Immediately there'd be a shutdown in government services, right? What would be the only body left in the world offering compassionate service to people? Everybody else is running for the hills. Everybody else is hunkering down with their canned goods and their shotgun and looking out for number one. The only people going to your house when you have a problem is us. Do you think that contributes to the cause of evangelism? You bet it does. Yeah, I mean, I'm not looking forward to whatever it is that's coming if we live to see it. But I do know this, it'll be the single greatest opportunity any of us ever have for evangelism. Right? Good. Any other questions? All right, good. So let's just leave with this then. So are we supposed to, obviously this is scary stuff, right? Like, if you're going away saying, wow, I don't know why I came tonight. Understand that we've just basically spent all of our time unpacking what is the worst day, you know, day meaning season, in human history. So obviously it sounds a little frightening. But the takeaway for the Christian is supposed to be peace, not panic. You're going to die anyway. Let me make you a guarantee tonight. You're going to die. Let me make you, I'll even tighten that guarantee. You're going to die in a time of tribulation. So just take a deep breath. Right? Whew. There's no way around it. There's no way around it. You're going to die in a time of tribulation. Okay. But the good news is here, right? Isn't it? If you've lived your life as a living sacrifice, if you've responded to the grace of God offered in Jesus Christ in the only reasonable way the Scriptures tell you to, by offering your life as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is a reasonable service of worship, then you go here. Your soul goes immediately to be with the Lord. You hover around the altar until the consummation of all things. You're resurrected to your body. You enjoy rewards and riches for eternity in the presence of the Lord. So it's good. All right. No need to panic. The other thing we know is that God is in control. The four horsemen come not up from hell. They come down from heaven. Nothing will come into your life, no difficulty, no tribulation, no trial, except that which is perfect in God's eyes for the accomplishment of his purposes. Right? If you're not saved, it will lead to your salvation. If you are saved, it will lead to your sanctification. If you're not saved and you don't want to be sanctified, then it's the punishment that you are morally responsible for receiving. So it's all going to work out. Works out for every person. Works out for you. But the peace of being a Christian is that you know who wins, right? I heard somebody say recently, that maybe it was even at Promise Keepers, that you know, if you don't have time to read the book of Revelation, here, I'll give you the summary. Jesus wins, right? I don't think that's quite an adequate summary. If I did, we wouldn't be doing this, but it's not a bad title. Jesus wins. So relax. You're going to die anyway. You're going to die in tribulation. But God is in control, and Jesus wins. Is that a good place to end? All right. John, do you want to close us in prayer?